So today, it is our season finale of Real Talk with QBV. We are lucky enough to be joined by head coach of Laney College, John Beam. Thanks for joining us, coach.
Hey, I'm glad to be here, but you know how we start everything here. You got it? You ready? Two claps. Ready, ready? There you go, baby. All right, now we're ready. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. Thanks, coach. And those of you who don't know, Coach Beam is, like I said, the head coach at Laney College. He's been a football coach for over 40 years now. He's won a lot of games, has coached a lot of great players, sent a lot of great players to college, NFL. So he's definitely been around for a while and everything. And he was also featured on Last Chance U of the most recent season, season 5, where a lot of you might recognize his name or Laney College as well. So the first couple of questions we're going to talk about is a couple things from Last Chance U. So the first thing that we're curious about is, you know, what's the main thing about Laney College and about yourself that Last Chance U doesn't portray?
It didn't portray.
Yes.
I don't know. Could you tell my sense of humor? I don't know. I'm a funny guy. You know, did you see my dance moves?
I saw that.
I think, you know, one of the things I think that probably I wish they showed better is that every Thursday we bring in guest speakers that talk about, you know, real life things for our guys. Mm-hmm. And most of these are speakers are black or brown men, just like they are, right? Tend to be. One was about mental health. One was an NFL player, pro bowler, Super Bowl winner, talking about being sexually abused as a young kid. Had another one come in that played for me. It was a Rose Bowl guy. Talked about having dyslexia and having a learning disability, asking for help. You know, awesome. It's about showing that it's okay to be vulnerable, that we all have some things going on. It's okay to ask for help, you know, that what's happening to you is not unique. So I don't know that it showed that necessarily, but I wish they would have. You know, one young man talked about, you know, he's written 3 books. But the first time he ever had a gun put, he's a black male growing up in Oakland, first time he ever had a gun put to his head was by a police officer, right? You know what I mean? Like, okay, wait a minute. This is kind of, you know, why? And so I think all this was happening before George Floyd, before Breonna Taylor, right? The show came out, but we were already talking or had been talking about it.
Right.
And so social justice is huge for me. And I don't know if it's played off in the show, if you can tell or not, but, and it's also big about what I see as what football or athletics can do for young men around social justice, right? It can show that there's avenues outside of the community that you can expand and leave and go to Nickel State or wherever, right? That you can go to other places and meet new people and get a different perspective of what life is outside of Oakland. And so I don't know if it showed that, but that's one of the things I think that I've always been really strong about. When I was at Skyline coaching in high school for 22, I took our kids to a game in Hawaii. I took them to Vegas. I took them to LA. You know, I took them places that would be out of their norm.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so we try to fly once a year because most of them never flown. Right. So they can get that experience.
Yeah. I think that's great. And, I think the show touched upon that a little bit, but I think they definitely could have a little more. And I just think that's great, especially like you said, with everything going on. And just like you said, when you're at that high school, to give those kids experience and just show them that way. I think that's awesome. And so is that something you kind of typically do, like the show when you brought in the police officer? Is that something that you guys will often do?
Yeah, a lot of times. So, you know, my kicking coach is actually, he just retired. He was a captain at OPD, right? So he was the longest at the time, the most senior, the whole force, been on the force the longest. So I've always, from the time at Skyline in Atlanta, to try to expose our players to police officers and police officers to our players so they can learn to see each other as human beings, not uniforms or stereotypes.
Right. That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah, so with the last...
Wow, you came out of nowhere. Okay.
My bad.
I didn't know we had a co-host. Okay, let's do it.
How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, so anyways, like how did the happen all like the camera, like people on Last Chance U, like on campus, like always following you around? Like affect either like in the locker room or, you know, just the overall like mentality?
I don't know. It's hard to gauge, you know. I'm sure there was definitely played something into it, but think about this, right? The first week is definitely a problem, right? You got 30 people there every day, right? There, as soon as I walk on campus, there's a sound guy giving me a mic. I mean, this is real production. These mics are like $15,000. The cameras are $100,000, right? These are professionals, and they're there every day, 6 days a week, 7 hours a day. But after the first week, they become part of your family. You know, you just kind of get used to it, right? And one of the things we talked about early on about, you know, how the kids would be in front of the camera, the producers pointed out that young people today are in front of cameras all the time. They're always taking their phones out to film something. So it's not as unique. But what's unique is that these are people that aren't part of your team, aren't part of your family when they first come in. By the end, they are part of your family, part of your team. And so that transformation occurs, and they start telling you their life stories as well as you're telling them your life story.
Yeah, it's awesome to see, like, you build that bond between all the, like, you never would have known, like, all the camera people behind the scenes. You guys actually create these really close bonds with them. It's really,
yeah, well, I mean, there's two of them were from Oakland, right? They're sharing that, you know, that they knew people that we, you know, that I knew, you know what I mean, growing up, or not growing up, taught and coached. So, yeah, it's an interesting situation, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. That's awesome. That's, I had no idea about that, so that's cool. One thing that we're wondering about too, when the show highlighted RJ's kind of recruiting situation, did they kind of exaggerate that a little as far as him, like you kind of not putting his name out there enough and like things like that? Because I feel like that's something they might have done.
Well, I mean, the thing is, RJ had scholarship offers, right? He just didn't like them, so that's why he was calling more people, right? What RJ struggled with is that he had a clock issue. And so he kept saying, you know, you're not going to be able to go D1 because you have a clock issue. And he kept saying, well, I can because I can get a petition, I can appeal. I go, yeah, but no one's going to do that for you. Take the D2, go right now and be able to play. Now, we didn't know the pandemic was going to happen and all that, but the point is leave now and play, right? This whole notion, you're at a D3, you said, right? This whole notion, I have to be a D1 player. Well, guess what? Guys from D2 go to the NFL. Guys from NEI. We had a guy 2 years ago, or a year ago, was in the Philadelphia Eagles camp, right? He was an NEI guy for us. He had to go there because of grades, but he was an All-American tight end for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I knew the scouts. And so just go and do what you got to do. Don't worry about what the label is. But RJ was stuck on that, right? And so it wasn't that, you know, that I wasn't helping him. I just thought, well, why would I keep calling if you already have one? There's nowhere else to, you know, like you're choosing not to. And at the time you said you were going to take it. So I didn't know you decided to change your mind. Because by then we're in pandemic lockdown. I don't see him, right? But, you know, the biggest thing with RJ is that, like, you know, it's not greener in the other pasture necessarily, right? If you can go to a school and whatever level is and catch, you know, get targeted 8 to 12 times a game, who do you care what level it is? You just want the ball in your hand. We couldn't throw the ball to him this year. We didn't have a quarterback situation. You know, he's like in the show, and you know, and they don't show these conversations. RJ, first of all, you don't run good routes. You're not where you're supposed to be. That's number one. Okay. You're a good player. There's nobody works harder than you, no doubt. You got a skill set. But how does a young quarterback that we're struggling at know where you're going to be if you're ab living? Second of all, I don't tell the quarterback where to throw the ball. You know what I mean? He does that based on what he reads and what he does. Yes, you're open. Probably should have thrown it to you, but I can't tell him, you know, like, you know, I'm not in his brain right now as he's throwing the ball. And if you saw a struggling throwing, you know, you see that. But now – go back a year earlier in 2018, we had a guy with 60 catches, 50 catches, 40 catches, 30 catches, right? The quarterback who's starting at San Diego State right now distributed the ball to everybody on the team. Well, a little bit different quarterback situation. And RJ, I think, knew it at the end, but he's frustrated. I think the camera didn't help there. You know, he wants to look good on the camera. He wants to make sure that he gets to a position that he can pursue his dreams, and I get that. But what I was trying to explain to him, it doesn't matter where you're at. Just go and ball wherever that is. But that was hard for him to grasp.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. That's definitely interesting to hear. And you just talked about a little bit about the quarterback situation. So that was definitely an interesting one to go through, of course, with having Dior play some quarterback as well. So what was that like for you as a head guy to go through that?
What's the name of this podcast?
Real Talk with QBV.
All right. You already know what it's like. So, you know, who would have thought that we'd have three quarterbacks get hurt, right? Yeah. One thing is for us, we don't want a ton of quarterbacks on our roster. We'd like to have three, possibly four at the most with a shirting. Because we want them to get enough reps. I don't want six quarterbacks that they all can't get reps, right? I want to make sure that we can develop and move forward. So our goal is to have a starter, a backup, a shirt, and maybe a red shirt and a gray shirt at the most. And so that's what we did, and they got hurt. Mm-hmm. And so now you're like, oh, snap, what do you got to do? So Dior, having played quarterback in high school, gave us the best option we thought to win. And the best, he knew the offense the best, right, that he could pick it up, which he did. We would have to tailor the offense to what his strengths were, and we did. Mm-hmm. Now, everybody goes, well, coach, that was a great job. Remember, I was a high school coach for 22 years. Trust me, you got to figure that out. A lot of times in high school, you're lucky. You take the best athlete and put him at quarterback. Yeah. You don't have time to develop this great guy. I had one of my better quarterbacks, a kid named Devon Best. We played 6 years in the NFL as a wide receiver. Yep. Well, in high school, he was a quarterback. You know, that's where it goes. After him was a guy we call Fat Frog. And, he was like 5'7", 5'8", seemed like he was about 250 pounds. But he was a quarterback. But he could play baseball and he could throw.
Yeah.
And he actually got a scholarship to Air Force Academy. So, you put the best athlete at that position, and that athlete also has to be the guy that can understand the offense. And also, let's be honest, selfless, right? That puts the team's team's success before even his own success. And again, Dior fit that perfectly. He knew the offense. He had been a quarterback, and most importantly, he was selfless in the sense that he put team one always. He wasn't an I guy.
Yeah, exactly. You can definitely tell the way he was that he kind of fits that mold and everything that you were just saying.
Yeah, and even like recently we've seen like Kendall Hinton from Denver played quarterback the other week, and then Jacoby Myers, threw that deep ball. We've seen a lot of receivers lately with all, the trick plays have been used more and more, and some of them have, experience from high school that's benefited them.
Yeah, because in most high schools, you're going to play your best athlete at quarterback, right? You come from a small high school. Well, that guy's probably going to be a receiver or running back another level, possibly. Even what's the kid, Hill at New Orleans, right? Sean's done a great job with him, right? I thought the Broncos wanted to call me so I could help him out, I thought, just give me a holler. I'll help you put in an offense for you right now real quick.
Yeah, for sure. So how are all the guys from the show doing? Are you in touch with a lot of them?
Yeah, I talk to them all, right? I talk to most of my players all the time. So Dior's doing great in Hawaii. He's struggling getting on the field. He's doing some punt returns. He's backing up Jared Smart, who's our other receiver there, who's a Biletnikoff finalist. So, it's tough. He wants to be on the field, but the coach is noticing him. He's doing well in school, which is really important. Ray is doing great in school. Wishes he could get on the field. His brother's killing it. Oregon State, had a big win over Oregon the other day. Ray's ready to get on the field hopefully this week. RJ's, because he didn't take the Division II offer at the end, it looks like he's set to transfer. He told me, I talked to him just recently again, he's all set to transfer to Cal and go to school and hopefully get a chance to walk on for his last year at Cal. And then him and his family moved out to Kentucky. And to Murray State, and they're loving it there. And everybody loves New and his family. He fits right in. He's the only Polynesian in Murray Stateville, whatever this town is, right? And he's loving it. And because of the show, the community's just embraced him.
Yeah, that definitely makes more sense how the community embraces him, because everyone kind of gets a glimpse that they got the kind of guy he is from the show.
Absolutely. Now, are you in a tanning booth or something? You're like all
young. No, my the wallpaper, like all the walls just like, I guess the color like radiates off and it makes it like, I was trying to fix it for like 10 minutes before you came on, but I couldn't like, figure anything
you
out.
Know, all right, you know, it's kind of cold and snowy. I just heard a big snow, so you want to make sure you get a Hawaiian tan, get in the booth, you know, while you're doing right this. Now, to be
honest. It's our company colors, at least, like I said to him. It's because we're navy and yellow, so.
Okay.
Yeah, it matches the hat.
Now, were you, you gotta a quarterback do what you gotta at Nickel State?
Yeah, I was a quarterback here, Nichols College. So Nichols College and Nichols State are two different. Okay. A lot of people.
Oh yeah, Nichols State is like Colorado or somewhere around there. Cause I've seen them too.
But yeah, I was a quarterback here and I actually was at two other schools previously. So
good for you. Can you sling it? Can you spin it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Of course.
All right.
Of
course. Good. Love it. You want to keep playing?
I do.
All right,
I do,
good.
Yeah. I'm considering some options for that for sure. Looking at some arena, some overseas as well. So
I got an overseas connection looking for a quarterback.
Okay.
Email me.
Say less.
We'll do.
Let's make it happen. So what's next for Laney? Like, what's the game plan?
Boy, my game plan keeps changing every day and every week, right? So – no football in the fall, obviously. We didn't play. The goal was to play in January with a 8-game season. If that didn't work, a 5-game season. Well, definitely not going to do 8 or 7, I'm sorry. Doesn't look like we'll be able to play in January. It doesn't look like. So what we're looking at now is doing padded spring ball in March, April, May, 15 days of pads as a way to scrimmage ourselves and put pads so college coaches can watch the kids in pads at least. And also so the kids can get a year of pads in so they won't be so far behind when we do start, hopefully back the following August, right? And, you know, so we can at least get their bodies ready to perform at a high level. And it was really bad because we thought we had a great team coming back, right? We had played all those freshmen on last chance U, so all those guys were going to be a year older. You know, and we thought, oh, God, we're going to be solid. We're going to have 2 6-4 tackles, you know, 2 6-3 guards, you know, running back coming back, quarterback coming back. Got a great – two great recruits at quarterback. We had, you know, 2 all-conference safeties back, 2 good D linemen back, 2 outside backers, 2 inside – I mean, we had, you know, almost everybody back. It's like, gee whiz. And now, you know, guys will be leaving, hopefully getting Division I scholarships or 2 and leaving now.
Right. Now, were you guys able to get anything in during the fall, like some couple of practices or anything like that?
Well, we did. All we did was we were to go starting in September, 2 days a week, we did conditioning.
Okay.
On the field, running, some resistant bands. And the last maybe 6 weeks, we threw the ball in pods only. So if you were in a pod with a quarterback, you could throw. If you were a receiver in a pod that didn't have a quarterback, you were kind of out of luck.
Right. That's
and no one-on-one. So DBs did some work, you know, some backpedal stuff. Linebackers did drops, and some of the D linemen went over to the sled, right?
Mm-hmm.
But not nothing really. Billy was just we tried to get them in there for an hour, 2 times a week, get a nice sweat going. But we got to check them, you know, their well-being, making sure they felt good when they were in school. Our counselor came out to make sure they're ready for class. Any problems they were having in classes, we were able to make sure they had computers and hotspots so they could do online learning. But it's better to do it face-to-face versus or not. So.
Right. Yeah, definitely challenging time. Seems like every school is kind of has to handle it in their own way and everything like that. So now our next thing we're wondering, Coach, is – you know, what's it been like to be able to produce so much college talent and, of course, the NFL talent as well over years as a high school and college coach?
Well, I think we just talked about it a little bit, right? It's just it's fun, right? You know, but it's the journey that, you know, you get to see them transform themselves, right? It's just like when I was at the high school, right, coaching and teaching, right? I always taught sophomores. We started school in 10th grade, right? So you see these kids come into sophomores, little gangly kids, right? the girls are bigger than the guys. The guys haven't hit puberty yet, basically. And then you see him at the senior bowl, and you know, you go, oh my God, they're like that ugly duckling that blossom, right? And you go, oh shit, you guys did a great job. You know how they change. So seeing a kid first start out in high school, learning how to play, working, and then college or whatever, and then you just see him now they're in the NFL. Oh my God, this journey that you've been on, I got to be a part of that incredible journey and view it, you know?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And what are some things that have helped you progress as a coach over the years?
You know, I've been really blessed to be able to meet with some of the best coaches in college and NFL and learn from them. And I've always surrounded myself with really good assistant coaches or good people that some were not even football coaches that you just turned them into football coaches, but they're just good people.
Right.
And good with kids. But, you know, like, the Mike March was my OC where I when I was at JC, so I learned from him. You know, Mike Bilotti was at Hayward when I was there. Even though I didn't play, I got to hear from him and become friends with him. You know, Sean Payton I met when Sean was 27 years old. I mean, just some of the examples. But you get to meet these guys. And because one of the advantages of having so many Division I players, they ask you to speak at their college, but you get to go. You have open doors. They always come. So, you know, if you came to recruit at Skyline or at Laney, I'd make you give me something, right? You got to, you know, show me something that you do, right? Like, well, how do you guys run your zone? Or, you know, tell me about your screen game. You got to, you know, I'm going to let you talk to my players. I'm going to give you access to these guys. You got to give me access to something too. So, again, you learn that. Well, tell me how you guys are running quarters, right? How you play match three. And so, you know, that allows you to grow your own library of knowledge, right? But I used to go, and are you coaching at Nichols?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Have you been to the convention at all?
No, because I just graduated this past spring, so I've been a coach. Okay. My coaching career has been in COVID so far.
Okay. All right. So if you talk to your guys, you know, I can walk into, I go to the convention, right? And everybody's, I don't go to those meetings, right? I can have a one-on-one with most any coach, right? I can walk into most places and get really not clinic talk but real talk, right? And so those are huge for me, you know, and learn, and I can expose my coaches to it as well, you know. Hey, go meet with this guy and bring back that knowledge. So again, that's been really good. So I would think, and even when my players have played in college or in the NFL, they would come back and share stuff with me. You know, like, well, what makes it, what's so much, or like they'll say, coach, man, this, he can't coach better than you. You just got better talent, you know, or whatever. Makes you feel good, but they probably are better coaches. But so what I guess I'm saying is just having the ability to learn from so many people because I had the access because I had athletes that they wanted to meet.
Right, right. That's interesting. That's awesome.
Yeah, so along with that, like,
yeah, that's better. And I was like, I got looked like I was trying to be in a tanning booth or something. Okay, go ahead.
All good. With all the coaching stuff, like, obviously you've been in the game for a while. So how has it been, like, kind of like back in the day, like the old-fashioned way of football? How has that been transitioning, like, all of your game plans and stuff to, like, the new modern? Like, the game seems a little quicker than it was back in the day. So has anything?
So I was actually just thinking about that, right? So back, you know, so when I first became the head coach at Skyline, right, you would get VHS tape of a game and you're trying to break it down, right? But you watch it, you know, you might get go backwards and forward, but you ain't breaking it down. Like now I can go on my iPad and I can call up all first down plays, right? All third down plays. I can call all red zone. I can call plus 40. It's already, you know, it's just so much. I go, today coaching is easy. Shit. You know, you got all the information right there. You know, then I got a young guy that's got to put all that data in. But, you know, how does it change? You know, you're watching film. I can go back and forth. I can pull that clip. I can put a spotlight on you. I can send it to you. We didn't have that before. And then I was just talking that when my second year as a head coach at Skyline, we went undefeated 10-0. I mean, we beat some really good teams. I had five Division I players on that team. I coached the running backs, the quarterbacks, and the linebackers. My other buddy, he coached the receivers and the DBs. And my other buddy was a D coordinator, and he coached the O-line and D-line. That was it. I did the punt team, and the other guy did the kickoff. You know what I mean? Three coaches.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Now I think I got three coaches just to coach just one position sometimes, you know, like, God dang, you know? So again, coaching's easy now. It's, you know, before we, and I was a strength and conditioning guy, you know, I'm the academic guy. Now I got my own strength and conditioning guy, my own academic guy. So you don't wear as many hats anymore as you used to. So that's one of the biggest difference, I think.
Right, right, for sure. And, you know, if you could go back to a younger version of yourself, what's a piece of advice that you would tell yourself?
Patience. Be patient. I must have flunked kindergarten because I don't share well and I have no patience, right? So, I don't know. I mean, I don't have regrets. You know, at the end of the day, I mean, what I did, and I'm happy where I'm at. And so, yeah, I'm sure there could be a lot of things you could change, but why? I mean, it turned out okay. I don't want to live in the past, right? I mean, I want to use some of it to help fuel me to be a better person and a better coach, but I don't want to dwell on it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when athletes are developing, whether it's middle school age, high school age, what are some things that you think they should really consider while they're developing?
So as a middle schooler, it would be a multi-sport athlete. Don't start specializing in football or basketball. You know, play everything, you know? Because I think first it rests muscles, right? Because you use a certain set of muscles in each sport that are unique to that sport. And so you don't get overuse and over-fatigue, right? So, you know, look at all these kids getting Tommy John surgery from baseball at such an early age, right? Back when I was playing, you didn't get that because you played other sports, right? So there was a rest period of your arm before you went to pitch again. I think for high school would be, you know, as you develop, don't have regrets at the end of the day, right? You know, make sure that you're putting in the effort that you want. If you want to be a Division I player, then you got to put Division I effort in. That means in the classroom as well as on the weight room or, you know, the field, you know, just, I know, just, you know, here's one, here's an example. I know going into my freshman year of college, I worked harder than I did between my junior and senior in high school, right? If I'd have worked that hard in high school, what have been the outcome of it? But I was a pretty good freaking player for a high school kid, but would I have been even better? You know what I mean? So, those types of things. But, you know, I think we always think we're working hard, but we can always work harder, you know, so look at that, have someone help you evaluate really what you're doing, you know, as far as the workload.
Right, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree.
Yeah. So going on to more of like, you know, a personal like conversation, like how have you dealt with all, you know, the big fame and popularity due to the show, you know, going out in public, you know, do you have people who, you know, recognize you, ask for a picture or anything like that?
So number one, remember, I'm already famous. You like that one? Because I've been in Oakland for so long, as I walk, people would always say, hey, coach, you know, like, hey, you know, so that's not new. But then the fame of Last Chance U is a little bit new, but we've been on COVID. So they got to figure out who I am wearing a mask. But there's been some times, you know, my granddaughter and I have been walking. So she's almost a year. So her and I walk to this golf course and back every day. It's about 3 miles round trip. And we just walk this, I push the stroller early on during the pandemic, you know, the golf course closed and we walk and we count the deer and the turkeys are running around the golf course. Well, I count and I tell her, you know, so then when the golf course opened up and then Last Chance U came out, we added another category to count. We counted, you know, groupies. So we had the turkeys, we had the deer, and then there would be groupies like, hey, Coach B, we saw you. They go, two claps, ready, ready, you know. And so that kind of added a little bit different, you know. So, but I don't know how it's going to be because since the show came out, we've been on pandemic since that time. I didn't even know there was this many podcasts in America. And I'm on a, you know, like, I was on a podcast right before I was you guys. That went 45 minutes. You know, 50 minutes, this one's going to go whatever. So I didn't realize that much. I didn't realize Access Hollywood would think it was great to interview me. You know, it was a Kardashians and a Coach Beam. I'm like, okay, I can see the similarities, right? You know, I was on a full page Sunday edition of the New York Times, the full page about Last Chance U and myself and our program with my picture on the New York Times, for God's sake. You know, like, wow, that's impressive. Or, you know, having it on Esquire magazine, you know, like, I thought that's GQ. You got to be dressed a certain way. Yeah, you got to see how I dress, you know. I wear shorts, I wear sweats, right? I mean, hey. But, you know, so that part of it was kind of interesting that so many people thought this show resonated with them, right? It was, mm-hmm. it wasn't really just a football show, right? It was about life and gentrification and mental health, social justice before it even came about, right? So all that was going on. And so, but I tell people that's been my life and what we've been doing here for 40 years. You're just seeing it for the first time. And so I joke, you know, like, yeah, you know, everybody in Oakland, you drive around Oakland, walk around with me, you, everybody will know who I am. So I'm not really going anywhere else but Oakland. So now if I go back in Massachusetts, I don't, maybe they'll know me now. I don't know. I've been getting all these fan or Instagram or reach outs from like all over the world. I mean, Brazil, Poland. That's the guys that want looking for a quarterback. Ireland, England, you know, India, Pakistan, New Zealand, you name it. I mean, it's just Mexico City. I'm like, oh my God, really? So it's been interesting, right? I mean, this show, somewhere between 14 and 16 million people saw this show. Like, oh my God, really? That's a lot of people, you know? And it's worldwide. I used to joke in the show, like, hey, you're on national TV, man. Act like it. And the producers or one of the cameramen would say, no, it's worldwide, coach. I go, yeah, okay, right. But really it was, you know, like he was right. It is worldwide. Yeah. So it's different.
Right. That's awesome.
Different.
And have you seen it kind of be also a benefit to Laney as just a school and as a program for that much good kind of publicity for you guys and everything?
It has been, but again, mm-hmm. because of COVID, we can't really, you know, quantify it.
Yeah.
So one thing is like right now, we don't take out-of-state kids really, right? We don't have housing for them. Mm-hmm. If I did, I'd have 200 out-of-state kids right now wanting to play football. And I just turn them down. I can't, you know.
Yeah.
Now, if they're a big-time player, you know, like a SEC caliber, we'll find a, help them find some housing maybe. We'll try to. But, you know, housing is $1,800 for a studio around here.
Mm.
You can pay that. Plus, on top of that, out-of-state fees, which are, you know, like, you know, almost $400 a unit. Whereas, you know, a California kid goes for free. You know, right. It's tough. So I don't know that, but it's funny. Like they've asked me to, like I was just last week, I did a talk for the career technology people. They had an open house. They wanted me to be a guest speaker on their open house. All right, sure. You know, all right, if you want me to, I'll do it.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I also like what you were just mentioning how, you know, this season really focused a lot of, obviously on football, but also on social justice, mental health, those type of things. I feel like in the previous seasons, I feel like it was just so much football and Division I college football, whereas this season was more of, you know, the total package, really. So that's something that I really enjoyed about watching the show. And I think a lot of people, you know, really appreciate that aspect.
I think some did. Some wanted football, right? Yeah. Some watched the show to watch football. And, you know, it wasn't Hard Knocks, right?
Right.
So it's different. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it was about this, you know, everybody talks about, you're the star of the show. I don't think so. I think the city of Oakland was a star, right? It really highlighted the struggles, the shine, or whatever you want to talk about, both of what Oakland's going through. And Oakland's going through it just like Detroit or Chicago, other places, right? So maybe it resonated with folks, you know. Especially with what's happened since then, you know, with the Breonna Taylor and George Floyd and all of the different things that have occurred, it, you know, it put another piece to that, which was really interesting because I wondered when all that was happening, you know, the show hadn't come out yet and we knew that they had all this film. You see 8 hours of film. Think about this, right? You see about 8 hours of film. They filmed for 2.5 months, 6 days a week, 7 hours a day to come up with 8 hours. So they could have been in there. They could have shown even more stuff, I guess, you know, more different things or if they wanted to, but about the social justice. But they filmed so much, right? And I think it was good, you know, talking about PTSD. You know, I see that in the inner cities all the time. I think it's not talked about, but I think there's a lot of that, you know, the emotional struggles that come with the violence that they see young men and young women see every day in the inner cities.
Right, right. Absolutely. I mean, personally, I think it was a great balance between football and everything else that was brought to attention. So I liked it. So you just talked about a little bit about, you know, Oakland. So what about the city? Like, how have you been able to create a winning culture when you were coaching high school there and college? Because, you know, Oakland, obviously, it has a different type of kid and everything. So how did you create a winning culture there?
So where did you grow up at?
I grew up in Brockton, Mass. It's a city.
Okay.
Inner city.
Right. Is it?
Yep.
Is it near Boston?
Yep.
And you know where the Reggie Lewis Center is in Boston?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
What's the name of that area called?
Roxbury. That's Roxbury.
Roxbury. Yep. Roxbury and Oakland are a lot alike, right?
Yep.
And so you said something. You said, well, a different type of kid, right?
Yeah.
Is that a stereotype? How are they different from that kid from where you grew up? And so what I'm saying is that we already labeled them, right?
Right.
And I didn't label them. So my success. When I went to Boston, twice in my life. I snuck into Fenway. I climbed a fence. I got caught, but then they let me stay and take the picture of the Coca-Cola bottle. But I went there for a track meet. And I went to this track meet, and my track coach was black. The four girls and a fifth girl joined us were black. And we went to go eat around, you know, the Copley Center?
Mm-hmm.
Is it Boykin Street or something like that? I don't know. Where Nike Town and all that is, right? So we go to eat. Every restaurant we went to for a while said they couldn't seat us. Oh, we were too big of a party. They couldn't seat us. Really? I look and there's a lot of big white parties in there, but they couldn't seat us. Okay. Then when they finally did seat us at one restaurant, they wouldn't give us all the silverware. They wouldn't give us rolls. I mean, they were just really rude to us.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went over to Roxbury. And how we were treated was totally different. A guy offered to give me a ride to the airport. Didn't even know me. Just heard me struggling to try to figure out how to get to the airport because I had to leave earlier. And they were telling me, well, no taxi will come here to pick you up. And the guy, well, I'll just take you. Didn't even know where I was. Why is that? And so what I'm saying is that Oakland, Roxbury, wherever, get given a label by the outside world that knows nothing about the city itself. And what I would say is that when you were a 15 or 14 or a 16-year-old freshman, sophomore, junior in high school, you had more in common with the young men that I was coaching than you think.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you didn't have in common maybe was where you lived, or if you had both parents and they didn't have both parents. And they may have some food insecurities, but they were still struggling with being 14 and liking girls or not liking girls yet, having someone, you know, validate them as an athlete or not. You know, school was a struggle. Or whatever home life they're making, that whoever was there, make them do too much, not let them do what they wanted. Those are similarities. And if you started looking at those similarities, you find that you had more in common than you had more in different. But we don't see that. We see color. We see social and economic dollar signs instead of looking at what we have in similarities. So the culture that I changed was to say, hey, look, you're a winner already. You're phenomenal. Let's go do it. In fact, we're going to go play all the rich private schools. We played them and beat them. I went to the rich suburban schools and beat them too. And then I would take our kids to dinner or whatnot, and they would say, oh, your kids behave so well. I go, why? You thought they were going to behave something differently? My kids behaved with the expectations that I gave them, right? This is how we're going to eat. This is what we're going to do. You're going to order these things. We're going to act. This is how we're going to act. The kids had no problem with that. I told them what the standard was, and they lived up to the standard. But I would always think those were backhanded comments, right? Even when I took the team to Hawaii, and we were staying at the hotel with Beverly Hills and some other rich schools, and their kids were a fool running all around. Our kids did exactly, and people gave us notice, that gave us free stuff. Man, you guys, we love your team. We want your team to come back all the time, right? And I thought, okay, but our guys had this great expectation. The kids from these other schools that have been to Hawaii a bunch, our kids had never been on a plane, let alone gone to Hawaii. They embraced the trip to Hawaii like you wouldn't believe. You know, being in the ocean for the first time, seeing coconut tree. I mean, they were fired up. And so I was glad I gave them that experience, right? And now they can go back with their families and their kids and say, I was here before. This is why. So, you know, they have the new expectations for their kids that they're going to take them to these places. So for me was the number one thing is I didn't have limitations on anybody I coached, right? You can go to college, you can graduate high school, and you're going to be a star, whatever a star means to you. And let's just make it happen from there.
Right, right. That's awesome. I think that goes back to what we talked about earlier with kind of just giving them that bigger picture, showing them the, like you said, going to Hawaii, things like that. I think that's awesome for sure. And definitely from the show and everything, from what I know about Oakland, definitely reminds me of kind of, like you said, Roxbury and the Boston area. So that's good.
I fit right in Roxbury. I couldn't believe it, man. Like, oh, wow. They go, you fit in.
Yeah.
Like, and I'd ask them, well, you had a different expectation for me too? You know what I mean?
Right.
Why do you think it's abnormal for me to fit in here? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
And I told him, he goes, you're right. I shouldn't. You know, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I had a hard time over by the Copley Center, right? They let me know I didn't fit in, or the people I'm with didn't fit in.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I hopped the fence to Wrigley, they said, oh, yeah, you fit in. to Fenway.
Yeah.
So, you know, everybody was to get here. So it's all right.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I believe the final question is just outside of football, like, what do you like to do in your free time? Like, maybe something they didn't show on the show, or like, hobbies that, you know, general public might not know about?
Well, number one, right now, I love being my granddaughter. So she's almost a year old. She was filmed on the show at the very end, right? My daughter was pregnant mm-hmm. during the filming of the show. So that's my favorite hobby right now. But, you know, people don't know about me is that I'm a certified diver. I dove the Great Barrier Reef. I dive Hawaii. I have skydived. I want to try everything once. You know, I tell the kids, they're just like you, don't put limitations on yourself. So you'll see me riding a little Segway during the show one time, right? The cameraman was using it. And I go, oh, I can ride that. And the kid goes, coach, you can't ride that. Why do you think you can do everything? I can ride it. So I rode it, and they're like, dang, he can ride it. Just like I pretend like I can dance. When they dance, you know, I try to dance with them. They're like, coach, you cannot dance. I go, yes, I can. In my mind, I'm doing it right, you know. Just like in your mind, you're really a good quarterback. You're really not, you know, so we laugh. But the point is, I like to try different things, right? I'm a family man. I think you can tell from the show, my family is really part of my life. And I like to do different things. I want to be in the ocean as much as possible. Unfortunately, with COVID, we can't, you know, but I kayak, you know, I scuba dive, I snorkel. I don't play golf, but I go once a year. I play with my buddies I grew up with in San Diego home, and they golf all the time, and I beat them. All I got to do is win one hole. And I win the whole round. They get pissed. They golf three times a week, and I play once a week, and I beat them. I'm still the best athlete. I tell them all the time. So I'm ultra, I don't know if you can tell this, but I'm ultra competitive.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, that's everything. That's everything we have, Coach. We really appreciate it. Appreciate you.
So here we go. We can't end without it. We got to do it right. Here we go. Two claps. Ready, ready? Yeah, you two were right. I appreciate you reading out. My hat's off to you, two young guys trying to make a podcast happen. How long you been podcasting now?
We started in June.
Yeah,
we started the podcast. Yeah, about 6 months. And then
how many followers you got right now?
We just started to get like listed on Spotify and things like that. But for like our social media, Instagram, we have about 1,400.
Good.
Yeah, and we're primarily a training program. Then the podcast is just kind of supplemental to kind of just give our athletes and other.
So you're training what, quarterbacks only or all positions?
Mostly quarterbacks, receivers, also okay. Some old linemen, running backs. So really
good
any
for
position.
You.
But yeah,
it's so a how lot many of fun. Kids do you guys train?
So we've trained up to this point. Close to 300 now.
Wow, that's so, just the two of you?
No, it's it's me and my dad. We run the program together, and then we have like a staff of coaches. We have interns as well. So
all in Massachusetts, then?
Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Maine. So we're pretty much all over New England.
I got a buddy up in Connecticut.
Oh, nice.
He coaches Central Connecticut, New Haven.
Yep.
good guy. So he's, yeah, that's good. Well, good. I'm glad. Well, you know, if you got a player that needs to go to JC route, make sure we talk.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I, but what you're doing is awesome, right? Giving kids an avenue, right? And that's, right, that's, you know, so it used to be, I, you know, high school coaches did all that, but some of them don't want to put that time anymore.
Exactly.
You know, do all that. So I'm glad someone is, right? Because if they're with you, they're not on the street, right? If they're, yep, with you, they're not doing things that may not be positive for them, and they're out exercising and doing things. So I'm glad that you're doing it, and thank you for reaching out to me.
Yeah, absolutely. This is definitely one of our better ones, so I know everyone will appreciate it.
Well, make sure you send me the link, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Will do.
Send it to my you can send it both to my social media account, but also email it, right?
Okay.
Yep. So that way I can save it for myself too.
Absolutely.
All right. Hey, absolutely. Good luck in that tanning booth, brother. you can get tanned up like me.
I'll try my best.
There you go. Hey,
gotta get my summer
y'all
body ready.
There you go. Hey, you guys stay safe, stay positive now.
Thanks, appreciate Coach. You too.
Have a good one.
Take care.
Good luck, right, Coach. Now.